Ab will no longer be a concern to anyone.
I was going to say something badass and cool, but take the people I love somewhere. Take Maggie. Somewhere safe. Somewhere without mad queens or insane she. And just get out of this entire thankless, painful, hideous business. Wizarding just isn't what it used to be. Not so many years ago, I'd think it was a busy week if someone asked me to locate a lost dog or a wedding ring. It had been horribly boring. I'd had lots and lots of free time. I hadn't been rich, but I'd gotten to buy plenty of books to read, and I'd never gone hungry. And no one had tried to kill me or ask me to make a horrible choice. Not once. You never know what you have until it's gone. Peace and quiet and people I love. Isn't that what everyone wants? Oh, hell. The outsider probably wasn't good for it anyway, and I did have one more option. I had been warned not to use the power of the well, but what else did I have? I might have done something extra stupid at that moment if the air hadn't suddenly filled with a massive sound. Two loud, horrible crunching sounds, followed by a single, short, sharp clap of thunder. It repeated the sequence again and again. Crunch, crunch, crack. Crunch, crunch, crack. No, wait. I knew this song. It was more like stomp, stomp, clap. Stomp, stomp, clap. What else did I have? I had friends. I looked up at Sharkface, who was scanning the lake's surface, an odd expression twisting his unsettling face. I smiled widely and said, "You didn't see this coming, did you?" Stomp, stomp, clap. Stomp, stomp, clap. This was somebody's mix version of the song, because it went straight to the chorus of voices, pure, human voices, loud enough to shake the ground, and I lifted my arms and sang the chorus of "We Will Rock You" along with them. The Halloween sky exploded with strobes of scarlet and blue light, laser streaks of white and viridian flickering everywhere, forming random flickering impressions of objects and faces, filling the sky with light that pulsed in time with the music. And as it did, the water beetle, the entire goddamn ship, exploded out from under a veil that had rendered it and the water it had displaced and every noise it had made undetectable not only to me, but to a small army of otherworldly monstrosities and their big bad Walker General too. The Walker let out another furious shriek, his hideous features twisted even more by the frenetic explosion of light in the sky, and that was all he had time to do. The water beetle slammed into the last barge at full speed. The mass differential between the two ships was significant, but this was different from when the barge had hit my iceberg. For one thing, it was almost entirely still, having only barely begun to pick up speed again. For another, the water beetle didn't hit it head on. Instead, it struck the barge from the side and right up by its nose. With less than 10 yards to spare before the barge's prow ground up onto Demon Reach's shore, the water beetle brutally slammed her nose away from contacting the power of the outgoing ley line. I couldn't hear the collision over the thunder of Queen's greatest hit, but it flung objects all over both ships, around with the impact, more so on the beetle than the barge. The barge wallowed, stunned, its nose turned away from the beach, its long side being presented to the island, while the water beetle rebounded violently, drunkenly, and crunched up onto her hull in the shadows, listing badly to one side. Mac and Molly were up at the wheel. She had nearly been thrown from the craft, but Mac had grabbed my apprentice around the waist and kept her from getting a flying lesson. I'm not sure she even noticed. Her face was contorted in a concentration so deep it was practically dementia. Her lips moving frantically, and she held a wand in either hand, moving them in entirely disconnected movements, as if directing two different orchestras through two different speed metal medleys. And as I watched, two other forms bounded up onto the water beetle's rail, then into graceful leaps that carried them over onto the barge, directly into the center of the ritual that was still running at a frantic pitch. Thomas had gone into the fight with his favorite combination of weapons, a sword and a pistol. Even as I watched, my brother whirled into a mass of figures on the deck, blades spinning, blood flying out in wide, clean arcs. He moved so swiftly that I could barely track him. Just a blur of steel here, a flash of cold gray eyes there. His gun fired in quick rhythm between strokes of his falcata, scything down the outsider's mortal henchmen like sheaves of wheat. The second figure was gray and shaggy and terrifying. Mouse's lion-like ruff of fur flew out like a true mane as he whirled and lunged into the ritual's participants wherever Thomas hadn't. I saw him rip a shotgun from the hands of a stunned guard and fling it with a snap of his head into another one before bounding forward and bringing half a dozen panicked men to the deck under his weight, and smashing them through the circle that had surrounded the ritual. The reduced energy the ritual had been able to use, the framework that the ley line would have turned into a deadly construction, vanished, released into the night sky to be shaken to pieces by the "We will rock you" chorus.
"Hey, Sharkface!"
I shouted, stepping forward, gathering winter and soul fire as I went. The furious walker whirled back to me just in time to have the heavy, octagonal barrel of the Winchester slam through the ridge of bone that he had instead of front teeth and drive all the way to the back of his mouth.
"Get rocked!" I said, and pulled the trigger.
Along with a .45 caliber bullet, I sent a column of pure energy and will surging down the barrel and into the walker's skull. His head exploded, literally exploded into streamers and gobbets of black ichor. His cloak of rags went mad, throwing the headless body into the air and sending it thrashing through the shallow water like a half-squashed bug. Dark vapor began issuing from the frantically twitching body, then suddenly gathered into a single cloud, all in a rush, and shot away, emitting a furious and agonized and terrorized scream as it went, alien but unmistakable. Then the body went limp in the water. The cloak continued flopping and thrashing for a few seconds before it, too, went still. A unified howl of dismay rose from the surface of the lake, from the outsiders, and the V-shaped wakes appeared on the surface, retreating from the island in every direction, chased by flickering spears of light and music, and the horns of the hunt began to blare in a frenzy, ringing up from the water's quivering surface. I saw a massive black-and-white form seize a fleeing outsider and roll, while a shadow-masked rider lashed out over and over with a long spear. In another place, a shark exploded from the waves, hanging against the sky for a second, jaws gaping, before plunging down directly atop another outsider, driving it beneath the waves where a dozen wickedly sharp fins abruptly converged. The woods stirred behind me, and Murphy came panting out of them, her P-90 hanging from its sling. She came to my side, staring at the chaos. I couldn't blame her. It was horrible. It was unique. It was glorious. It was... Suddenly it felt like my heart had stopped. It was distracting.
"Molly!"
I screamed.
"Molly!"
Mac heard me through that mess and shook Molly. When she didn't react, he grimaced, and then delivered a short, sharp smack to her cheek. She gasped and blinked her eyes, and the sky show and soundtrack abruptly vanished, right in the middle of the guitar solo.
"Get them out of the water!"
I screamed.
"Get onto the shore! Hurry!"
Molly blinked at me several times. Then she seemed to get it and nodded her head quickly. She and Mac hurried down to the Beatles' slanted deck, to the door to below. She called out and Sarissa and Justine appeared, both looking terrified. Molly pointed them at the island, and the three jumped from the ship to the waist-deep water and started wading ashore. Mouse caught what was happening and let out a short, sharp bark. Mouse doesn't bark often, but when he does, he can make bits of spackle fall from the ceiling. He and Thomas plunged from the bloody deck of the barge into the water and began swimming swiftly toward the island. The cries of the hunt and the frantic outsiders filled the air now, and even as they did, I forced myself to calm my thoughts, to take slow breaths, to focus on my intellectus of the island. I couldn't sense anything specifically, but an instinct dragged my chin around, turning me to stare up toward the crest of the island, where the old ruined lighthouse stood among the skeletal forms of the late autumn trees. Then it hit me. I shouldn't have been able to see the lighthouse or the trees from down here, not on a cloudy night, but their silhouettes were clear. There was light up there. And as my friends reached the shore and hurried over to me, I realized that there was an empty place in my awareness of the island. I would never have sensed it if I hadn't been looking. I couldn't feel anything from around the top of the hill. The walker was just the distraction, I breathed. Damn it! They're not pulling that same trick on me this time. I turned to them and said, I think someone's up at the top of the hill, and whatever they're doing, it ain't good. Stay right behind me. Come on. I was pretty sure I knew who was up there, and I wasn't about to do this alone. So I started toward the top of the hill, taking the agonizingly slow route that I knew would enable my friends to keep up with me. Chapter 46. Whoever was up at the top of the hill had things ready to stop me from getting there. It didn't work out well for them. I knew about the trip lines that had been strung up between the trees at ankle level and knew where the gaps were. More harassment-level opposition from the enemy little folk, I was guessing. The people with me didn't even realize that there were any trip lines. After that was a trio of particularly vicious-looking fey hounds, the little cousins of black dogs. I had taken a black dog on once in my calmer days and didn't care for a rematch. I clipped one of the hounds with a shot from the Winchester while it was crouching in the brush ahead, waiting for me to come a few steps closer, and I set on fire a thicket where another one hid before we got within 30 feet. Ambush predators become unnerved when their would-be prey spots them. Fayhound number 3 hustled out of a hollow log where he'd been planning to rush out and attack with his buddies, and retreated with the 2 wounded hounds to the far side of the island.
"How did they get on the island?" Molly asked as we kept moving.
She was breathing hard, both from her efforts on the lake and from the hike up.
"I thought it kept everyone away."
Demon Reach was meant to keep things in, not out, but I didn't want to blab about that in front of mixed company. "It encourages everyone to stay away and turns up the heat slowly for anyone who doesn't," I said back. "But that's when it isn't being attacked by an army of cultists and a horde of howling freaks from beyond reality. It was busy making sure none of the outsiders could come up onto shore. And none of them could. It just outmuscled an army led by something that could go toe-to-toe with Mab. Everything has its limits." I checked with my intellectus and realized that Mac and Sarissa were bringing up the rear. That wouldn't do. I still didn't know the role they were playing in this game. "Mouse," I called, "take rear guard, in case those hounds circle around and try to sneak up on us." The big furball made a huffing sound, an exhalation somewhere between a bark and a sneeze, but chewier. Chewy. I reminded myself to keep track of Mac and Sarissa as we went, but I felt better once Mouse was back there. Intellectus was handy as a reference guide, but not as an early warning system. If either one of them tried anything shady, the shaggy Tibetan guardian was probably the one most likely to notice first anyway. Might as well have him close. "Who's up there?" Karen asked, her voice low and tense.
"Fairy queens, I think. Plural."
"Whoa," Thomas said. "Why?"
"Complicated, no time," I said.
"No one does anything until I do. Don't even talk. If the balloon goes up, go after whoever I light up first. After that, improvise." After that, I continued, increasing the pace a little. The trees near the crown of the island were older, thicker, and taller. The spreading canopy of their branches had shaded out most of the brush beneath them, and the ground was easier to move across, being mostly an irregular, soggy carpet of years and years worth of fallen leaves. The scent of molds was thick as we went through, disturbing them. We emerged into the clearing at the top of the hill, and I stopped in my tracks 6 inches before I would have come out of the shadow of the forest. Thomas bumped into me. I looked partly over my shoulder with a little push of air through my teeth. He elbowed me in the lower back. The hilltop had been closed in a circle of starlight. I didn't know how else to describe it. I didn't know what I was looking at. 12 feet off the ground was a band of illumination, glowing rather than glaring, something that filled the hilltop with gentle light, like an enormous ring floating above the earth. It was of precise width, as if drawn with a compass, and I knew that it was exactly 1 foot thick, 12 inches. The color was something I had never seen before, changing subtly moment to moment, holding silver and blue and gold, but it wasn't any of those things, and words fail. But it was beautiful, like love, like music, like truth, something that passed through the eyes and plunged straight to the soul. Gentle, softly glowing light slid from the outer edge of the circle, like a sheet of water from an elegant fountain, falling to the ground in a slow-motion liquid curtain of pure light, hiding what was behind it. I felt the grasshopper move up beside me, her eyes wide.
"Boss," she whispered, "this would make my mom talk in her church voice. What are we looking at?"
"Merlin's work," I breathed. "That circle. I think it's part of the island's architecture."
"Wow."
It's beautiful," Sarissa murmured. "I've never seen anything like it, and I've been looking at incredible things my whole life."
I spoke something I was certain was true in the same moment that I understood it. It had to be beautiful. It had to be made from beauty. There is too much ugly inside for it to be made of anything else.
"What do you mean, ugly?"
Karen asked, her voice hushed. "Later," I said. I shook my head and blinked my eyes several times. "City to save." I tried to find something about the circle in my intellectus, but I had apparently already learned everything I could learn about it that way. I knew its exact dimensions. I knew it was part of the structure of the massive spell that made the well exist. And that was it. It was like the entire thing had been classified, top secret, need to know only. And apparently I didn't need to know. Which, I supposed, made sense. We were talking about a massive security system. Molly stooped and picked up a rock. She gave it a gentle underhand toss at the wall of light, and it passed through without making a ripple.
"Safe?" she asked.
"I doubt it. Give me something that isn't a part of the island," I said. I heard her slip her backpack off her shoulder and open a zipper. Then she touched my arm and passed me a granola bar wrapped in plastic. I tossed it at the wall, and when it touched, it was destroyed. It didn't go violently. It simply became a flicker of softly glowing light in the precise shape of the bar of food. Then it was gone.
"That also was pretty," Thomas noted, in a completely lethal kind of way.
"Look who's talking," Molly said.
"It's not all that high," he said. "Maybe I could jump it."
"Molly," I said.
She passed me another granola bar and I threw it over the wall. The wall destroyed it in midair. "Maybe not," Thomas said.
"Okay," Karen said. "So, how do we get through it?"
I thought about it for a second, then I licked my lips and said, "We don't. I do." "Alone?" Thomas said. "Sort of defeats the point of bringing us. Also death, bad plan."
"I think it will let me through," I said.
"You think?" "Look," I said, "me and the island are kind of partners."
"Oh, right," Thomas said.
He looked at Karen and said, "Harry's a geosexual." Karen arched an eyebrow and gave me a look.
"You can't go alone,"
Molly said, her voice worried. "Looks like it's the only way I can go," I said. "So we do this Ulysses style. I go in, I figure a way to let down the gate, and then we sack Troy."
"Can you do that?" Karen asked.
I licked my lips and looked at the wall of light.
"I'd better be able to."
"You're tired," Molly said. "I'm fine."
"Your hands are shaking."
"Were they?" "They were." They are fine also. I didn't feel tired. Given how much magic I'd been throwing around this day, I should have been comatose with fatigue hours ago, but I just didn't feel it. That wasn't a good sign. Maybe Butters had been right. No matter how much juice I got from the mantle of winter, bodies have limits. I was pushing mine. I passed the Winchester to Thomas and took off my new duster. At his lifted eyebrow, I said, "Not of the island. Hold them for me." He exhaled and took them. "No reruns, okay?" "Pfft," I said. "Be like sneaking into the movies." Karen touched my arm. "Just don't say that you'll be right back. You'll jinx it." "I am a professional wizard," I said. "I know all about jinxes." Having said that, I checked to make sure my shirt wasn't red. It wasn't. Then I realized I was putting this off, because if I was wrong, I was about to go join Yoda and Obi-Wan in Blue Light Country. So I took a deep breath and strode forward into the beautiful, deadly barrier.
Chapter 47. I lived, just in case anyone was wondering. I stepped through, and liquid light poured over me like warm syrup. There was a little bit of a tingle as it passed over the surface of my body, and then it was gone. As were my clothes, like completely. I had sort of hoped that they would stay, the way Superman's unitard stays mostly invincible because it's really close to his skin. Plus, I hadn't felt like stripping in front of everyone for something so relatively trivial as preserving my garage sale wardrobe, and, more important, I didn't think I had time to start playing Mr. Rogers while someone screwed around with my island. City to save. Check out my focus. Of course, going into battle full commando could be problematic. On the other hand, every single time Mab had come at me during my recovery, every time, I'd been just like this, without resources of any kind except what I carried within me. I wasn't a big believer in coincidence. Had she been trying only to strengthen me generally, or had she been preparing me for this exact situation? Could Mab see that far ahead? Or was this simply a case of superior preparedness proving itself in action? What was it I heard in a martial arts studio at some point? Learn to fight naked and you can never be disarmed. Which is fine, I guess, as long as there aren't mosquitoes. I got low and stayed still and opened my senses. First thing, I was inside a ritual circle, one that was currently functioning, being used for a spell. It wasn't the cheap and quick kind I was used to, I guessed, or it would have been broken when I crossed it. Maybe it had kept its integrity because as part of the island, I already existed on either side of the circle. There were certain creatures who could move back and forth across boundaries like that without disturbing them in the slightest. Most notably the common cat. It was one reason practitioners so often kept cats as house pets. From a technical standpoint, they are very magic-friendly. Maybe I hadn't broken it because it had been set up in such a way as to consider the island's warden one of those creatures. Or maybe it was the continual rippling, liquid nature of the circle itself. Whatever the case, I was standing inside an active circle. Possibly the most active circle I had ever seen. Magic hummed through the air and the ground, so much that I felt my hair standing on end, and some primitive instinct-level awareness from the winter night's mantle, the same part that had given me so much trouble all day, started advising me to get the hell out of there, along with the rest of the island's animals. That was why my intellectus hadn't been able to tell me what was happening here. As a form of magical awareness, an active circle had blocked my intellectus out. Now it worked just fine for what was inside the circle. It was everything outside of it that it could no longer touch. I learned all of that at the same time my regular old five senses registered what was happening. I was not alone. The crown of the hill was covered with fairies. All right, that wasn't literally true. There were 20 of them, plus one other mortal. And Demon Reach. The island spirit made manifest stood in the ruins of the lighthouse,
in the opening in the wall that led to the entrance to the stairs down to the well. Its vast form was planted, braced like a man standing against a strong wind, hunched, bent forward slightly, but not in a stance of battle. The spirit did not exist for such things. Instead, I realized, it did only what it always had. It endured. But even as I watched, I saw bits of demon reach flying backward, away from its mass, but slowly, as if a current of thick syrup flowed past the spirit, slowly wearing it away. The spirit stood at one point of an equilateral triangle. At one of the other points stood Lily, the summer lady. She stood with her right arm, the arm that projects energy, upraised. She wore that same simple dress I'd seen her in earlier. It was pressed against the front of her body, and her silver-white hair was blown back as if in a strong wind. There was no visible display of energy coming from her other than that. But the ground between her and Demon Reach was covered in fresh green grass, and I could feel that she was pouring out power against the spirit. Behind her stood a pair of she of the summer court, each with a hand on her shoulder. Behind them were three more, and four more were behind them, each with her hands on the shoulder of someone in front of them, forming a pyramid shape. They were all projecting power forward, focusing it through Lily, making her even stronger than she already was. Maeve stood at the third point of the triangle, with her own pyramid of supporters. She wore leather short shorts, military boots, and a bikini top, all of midnight blue. She stood in the same stance as Lily, the same unseen power flaring from her outstretched hand, but her face was set in a wide, manic smile, and the ground between her and Demon Reach was covered in a layer of frost. The red cap stood at her right hand, one hand on her shoulder. The massive rawhead from my birthday party was there too, and its bony claws, drenched in and dripping fresh blood, rested on her other shoulder. Eight other winter she were behind them, forming a power pyramid of their own. Then I heard footsteps, and a second later Fix, the summer knight, stepped around the corner of my partially completed cottage and walked toward me. He was wearing fairy mail, gleaming, draping over a wiry, hard-muscled frame, and he carried his sword in his hand. Fix stopped between me and the triangle at the top of the hill.
"Hey, Harry,"
he said quietly.
"Hey, Fix.
Cold?
Not so much.
You know what's happening here?"
"What must happen?"
he said.
"According to who?"
"My lady."
"She's wrong."
Fix stood there for a time, quiet. Then he said,
"Doesn't matter."
"Why not?"
"Because she is my lady. You will not raise your hand against her."
I stared at Fix, who had suffered under the office of Lloyd Slate, and behind him at Lily, who had been Slate's frequent victim. I wondered how many times back then Fix had ached to be able to save her, to have the power to stand up to the winter night. And now he did. There comes a time when no amount of talk can change the course of events, when people are committed, when their actions are dictated by the necessity of the situation their choices have created. Fix had put his faith in Lily and would fight to the death to defend her. Nothing I had to say would change that. I could see that in his face.
"Go back," he said.
"Can't."
"Stand aside?"
"Can't."
"So, it's like that," I said.
Fix exhaled, then he nodded.
"Yeah." And for the first time in a decade, the winter night and summer night went to war. Fix hurled a bolt of pure summer fire that scorched the ground beneath it as it flew at me. I didn't have time to think, but some part of me knew this game. Dodging the bolt wouldn't be enough. The bloom of heated air coming off that fire would burn me if it even came close. That was why Fix would have the advantage in this match, if he kept the distance open and just threw bolt after bolt. So I called upon Winter to chill the air around me as I ducked to one side. Fire and cold met, clashed, and filled the air with mist. mist that would give me the chance to close to grips with my foe. Part of me, the part of me that I was sure was me, viewed these tactics with alarm. I was freaking naked and unarmed. Fix had the mantle of the summer night, and it made him just as strong and fast and tough as I was. He was armored and toted a freaking sword, and he'd had 10 years of training with the summer court to learn how to fight and use the mantle. Plus, he presumably hadn't spent all day pushing his abilities to the limit. But the winter mantle didn't care about that. It simply saw its enemy and wanted to destroy it. The best way to do that was to get in close and rip out Fix's throat. Except that wasn't how the last winter night had killed the last summer night. Lloyd Slade had iced the stairs underneath the other guy's feet and pushed him down. And Slade had been young and in good shape, whereas the other summer night had been an old man. So I thought it would be smart to assume that the instinctual knowledge of the winter mantle, while it could be handy, was basically that of a starving predator, a wolf in winter. It wanted blood, lots of it, now. And if I played it like that, Fix was going to leave my guts on the ground. Instead of charging ahead, I veered to one side for several steps and then froze. An instant later, another bolt of fire lit up the mist, right through where I would have been if I'd followed the mantle's instinct. Of course, it had to be that way. Winter's night was the mountain lion, the wolf. Summer's was the stag, the bison. Winter was oriented to stalking, hunting, and killing prey. Summer to avoiding a confrontation until an advantage could be had, then savagely pressing that advantage for all it was worth. Fix would have a wealth of instinctive knowledge to draw on if I went after him Winter's way, and would be at his most dangerous the same way as, for example, a student of pure Aikido. He would use the strength of an attack to assist his own defense, turning it back on the attacker. But if I didn't give him that kind of aggressive assault, I would rob him of his instinctive advantage. Screw being the winter knight. Before everything else, I was a wizard. So I flicked my wrist, whispered, "Obscurata," and vanished behind a veil. My veils aren't much good compared to the grasshoppers, or almost anyone else's, really. But when you're standing in a giant fog bank, they don't need to be very good to make you effectively invisible. And I know how to move very quietly. I wouldn't have trusted them against one of the she, but Fix wasn't one. He was a changeling, with one mortal parent and one fey one. But except for the summer mantle, he was as human as the next guy. I prowled ahead, listening, sharpening the acuity of my ears to a far greater level than that of which they were normally capable, and heard Fix's smooth breathing before I'd taken a dozen steps. I froze in place. I couldn't locate him exactly, but I kept myself from making an impatient sound and consulted my intellectus. Fix was standing 36 feet 4 inches away, about 22 degrees to the left of the way my nose was facing. If I'd had a gun, I was pretty sure I could have shot him. Fix had frozen in place, too. Bah! His mantle was probably advising him to be patient, just as mine was screaming at me to stop waiting, stalk him, and pounce. I took advantage of it for maybe a minute, consulting my intellectus and moving 50 feet to one side, where I could pick something up off the ground. Then I went back and waited, but he still hadn't stirred. This wouldn't work if he stood his ground. I had to make him move. I retreated a few more steps into the mist and spoke away from him, hoping the lousy visibility in my veil would confuse the exact origin of my voice. "I get Lloyd Slade a little better now, you know," I said. "The mantle, it drove him, made him want things." "Lloyd Slate was a monster," came Fix's voice. I hated to do it, but I had to push his buttons. "He was as human as the next man," I said. "It just made his desires louder and louder. There wasn't anything he could have done about it." "Do you hear yourself, Harry?" Fix called. There was an edge in his voice. "You sound like a man making excuses or justifications." "Yeah, but I'm not Slate," I shot back, my voice hotter. "Slate was some pathetic bully. I had as much power as 100 slates way before I cut his throat.
Fix's breathing came faster. He had it under control, but he was scared.
The Harry Dresden I knew never would have said something like that.
That was 10 years of persecution complex and a war ago, Fix, I told him. And you haven't got room to get all righteous with me. I know you're feeling things too, just like I am.
Time to sink the right barb to goad him into movement, aggression.
What do you see when you look at Lily, man? She's gorgeous. I have a hard time thinking about anything else when she's there.
Shut up, he said in a quiet voice.
Seriously, I continued.
The dialogue came easily, too easily. The winter mantle was talking to a part of me that did not have much in the way of restraint.
That hot little ass? I mean, gosh, just thinking about it. If he could see me now, I'd be a little embarrassed.
Shut up, he said again.
Come on, bros before hoes, man. That summer mantle got a herd instinct going? 'Cause for something as sweet as that, I'm thinking we could share if...
If my intellectus hadn't been focused on him to let me see what was coming, I'd have been burned alive. I flung myself to one side as he turned and hurled another bolt of fire at me. I had to gather more winter around myself to protect my vulnerable hide, thickening the mists even more. And Fix seemed to key on the surge of cold. He pivoted toward me, took 2 steps, and leapt with his sword held in both hands. 37 feet. That was how far he jumped, and it had come effortlessly. He could have done more. I knew exactly how much force he pressed the ground with when he left it, exactly what angle he jumped at. My intellectus could track the air and the mist he was displacing as he leapt through it. I took 2 steps away just as he leapt. I felt sick, like I was fighting a blind man. Fix landed exactly 2 feet short of where I'd been, and his sword came down through the space where I'd been standing. If I'd still been there, he would have split me into 2 gruesome halves. But I wasn't. I was standing behind him, within inches of his back, and before he could rise, I struck. A moment before, I'd used my intellectus to locate an old nail on the ground, about 4 inches long, partly coated in rust. Thomas or I must have dropped it while walking to or from the cottage, back when we'd been beginning repairs on it and building the What's Up dock. The nail had lain out through several seasons, only lightly touched by them. I put my thumb behind its head, used the strength of the winter mantle, and drove it straight through mail that had never been designed to stop such a small point, and 2 inches into the muscle of Fix's shoulder blade. Fix let out a scream of shock and pain and swung his sword at me, but with cold steel piercing his skin and his access to the summer mantle disrupted, he had only his own reflexes, strength, and skill to rely on. He hadn't trained in them without the power of the summer night to back them up, and he hadn't learned in the brutal school of hard knocks that Mab had put me through. The sword slash was slowed and clumsy, and I struck him twice, once on the wrist, breaking it with a clear snap, sending the sword to the ground, and once on the jaw, not quite as hard, sending Fix to the ground in a senseless heap.
Night takes night, I called into the cloudy night air. Check!
The struggle between the Queens and Demon Reach had already been a silent one, but now the air abruptly went still. I couldn't see them, but I knew that Lily had turned her body partly away from Demon Reach, toward me, breaking her connection with one of the 2 she supporting her. Demon Reach, for its part, had altered its facing to square off against Maeve. I could sense that the little bits of its body that had been eroding away were now moving in the opposite direction, reaccruing to its main mass.
Fix?
The summer lady called, her voice vaguely confused. Then it was touched by sudden, cold fear.
Fix? What are you doing? Maeve snarled. You stupid cow! I cannot defeat the Guardian alone!
Lily ignored her. I sensed her move her hand, an almost absent gesture, and a sudden wind brushed the fog Fix and I had created from the hilltop, as easily as a young mother sweeping fallen Cheerios from a toddler's tray. Holy crap! I knew the ladies were powerful,
but I hadn't realized what that meant in practical terms. Making that much air move that precisely and that suddenly is hard, and it would take a serious investment of energy to make it happen. I could have done it, but it would have been enough heavy lifting to make me want a cold beer and a nice sit-down when I was finished. If I'd had to do it two or three times in a row, I'd have been too tired to lift the beer. Lily had done it with a comparative flick of her fingers. And there I was, standing naked on the hilltop over the unmoving form of Fix. I still had my veil up, but it was so rudimentary as to be useless against someone as savvy as the she. I shouldn't have bothered to hold on to it at all, but some irrational instinct made me condense it instead to a small field of blurry energy around my hips. "He's alive, Lily," I said quickly. "We need to talk." The whites showed all the way around Lily's eyes. "What?" she demanded, fury swelling in her tone. "What did you say to me?" Whoa. On my worst diplomatic day, I still shouldn't have garnered a reaction like that from what I'd said. "Lily, calm down. Fix is alive. But I think you're still you over there, and I don't think you've been given the whole truth. Let's talk before things happen that everyone regrets." "How dare you?" she snarled, her rage turning incandescent. Literally, fire burst from her hands and wreathed her forearms. "How dare you?" I held up my own hands in front of me, empty. I was pretty sure I looked confused. "Hell's bells, Lily, what the hell? I do not want to fight here." Lily screamed, and summer fire engulfed her, causing her courtiers to leap back away. Gold and green and starlight silver, the fire danced around her, mesmerizing and swelling. Suddenly, I saw the same rage that I'd seen in Titania's eyes, but that had been the smoldering coals left over after the passing of years, after mourning and grief had eased. The power Lily held on to now came from the same kind of passion, but it was fresh and white-hot, and it wasn't going to cool anytime soon. Then I realized what was going on. Maeve had extended her other hand toward me, and her fingers were dancing merrily. She gave me the briefest flash of a look, and it was poisonously amused. I reached into the air in front of me and felt it there, an elegant little glamour. Simple enough that Maeve could have done it in her sleep, complex enough to slip by anyone not looking for it, even one of the she. I'd been talking, but it hadn't been my words getting to Lily. Maeve had chosen my words for me. I don't know what she'd said, but she'd picked something exactly right to drive her summer counterpart mad with rage. Lily's gentler, more compassionate nature had been used against her. Maeve had employed her simple little glamour with exquisite timing, at the one instant when there was no way the relatively inexperienced Lily would have expected it, when she was full of concern for the fallen Fix. With a sinking feeling, I realized that the passionate young lady of summer was no Titania. She had all the heat, but none of the restraint, the balance, and there was no way in hell that she was going to be able to think, to reason, to hold back her fury.
"Destroy him!"
she screamed. Trees shook and rocks cracked as she spoke. The sound of it ripped at my ears, and I felt a sudden hot wetness in them.
"Destroy Harry Dresden!"
She threw forth her hands, and a wall of fire, 20 feet high and as wide as a football field, roared toward me. Chapter 48. For a fraction of a second, my brain squealed like the last little piggy running all the way home, a spinal-level fear reaction. I had an experience with fire once. It's the kind of memory that sticks pretty hard. Fire's tough to defend against. That's one of the reasons it's always been my favorite form of attack. Even if you don't actually set your target on fire, you can still roast it by heating up the air around it, unless it just throws away everything to get out of your way, in which case it isn't thinking about doing anything back to you. As weapons go, fire is top drawer. But fire's tricky and fickle. Without focus, it's just chaos, the random release of stored chemical energy. It isn't enough to just have fire. You've got to know when and where and how to use it to best effect. And Lily didn't. I threw myself down over the unconscious Fix and focused, thrusting my hands out to either side, shouting,
Defendarius!
As I formed a shield around us in a bubble, the firestorm roared down onto us, washing over us like an ocean tide. My shield held the fire back, but it couldn't stop it entirely, and heat began to burn through. That was why I reached for Winter and filled the little bubble around us with the cold. That wave of fire was too massive for me to overcome, but I didn't have to overcome it. It was spread out over such a huge area that all I had to do was beat a relatively tiny portion of it, to hold out against it like a large stone on a beach. I didn't have the strength to beat it, but I did have the strength to hold it away, and to keep just the air within my shield from becoming an oven. The fire washed over us, and I held on to the shield for a few seconds more, as long as I thought I could. Without my bracelet or my staff to help direct the energy, a few seconds were all I could do, but it was enough to survive. It left me on my hands and knees, gasping, on a small circle of frost-covered earth, but I made it, and so did Fix. Go me. Maeve's mocking laughter rang out over the hilltop. Hot air touched the side of my face and grew gently, along with an approaching light. I looked up to see Lily walking toward me over the scorched earth, naked now but for the flames curling around her body, her own clothing burned away in the firestorm. Her eyes weren't there. There were only a pair of searing fires burning where they had been, wisps of orange and scarlet flame rising up from them as she came closer. Her silken white hair rose into a wavering column like a flame itself, lifted by the hot air and colored golden green and orange by the light of her fiery nimbus. Behind her, the other summer she were shadows, with fire dancing in the reflection of silvery weapons, and with the echoes of it flickering in their hands and upon their brows, power and weapons alike spreading out around me to leave me no escape. But at the flick of a hand from Lily, they stopped and withdrew, back to their original positions near the tower. I guessed that she didn't want to incinerate her summer buddies along with me. I started to lift my hand to ready another shield, but my other arm couldn't take the weight of my body, and I nearly collapsed. That was it, then. I was out of gas. I managed to get myself up onto my knees and sat back on my heels, panting. Then I tugged the nail out of Fix's back, gripped it grimly, and faced Lily. She stopped about 6 feet away from me, covered in living fire, and stared down, her eyes like spotlights. "He's okay, Lily," I said. "Fix is okay. God, Lily, can you even hear me?" Evidently she could not. Lily lifted a hand, and a minuscule sphere of white-hot light formed in the air above it, a tiny star. Now there, that was focus. I couldn't have stopped something that concentrated without a major amount of preparation. I could appreciate it in a professional sense, even if it was about to kill me horribly. And suddenly I felt very stupid. What the fuck had I been thinking? The queens of fairy, even the least of them, were elemental powers, something that was simply out of the league of any mortal. I should have tried to contact my grandfather in the Grey Council, should have at least put out a scream to the White Council, even if they were less likely to help. And I should have sent Michael and his family, and Maggie, out of town the second I'd realized the danger. I'd saved the day before, maybe often enough to make me overconfident. I sneer about the White Council being arrogant all the time, but I'd walked into the exact same stupid trap, hadn't I? Confident of my ability to handle anything that came along, I'd gathered together my little band of enablers and cruised right into this disaster. "Lily," I said wearily, "listen to me. We've both been set up by Maeve." White fire stared at me. "The adversary," I said. "It's in her. It's been in her for a long time. Think. It makes the things it takes act against their natures. And you know what it's done for Maeve? I leaned forward, holding my weary hands, palms up. It's let her lie. She can lie her ass off and never blink an eye. Think. How much of your trust in her, of your awareness of what's going on in the world, is based on knowing that she can't speak an untruth? Fire stared and did not consume me, so I kept talking. Don't take me at my word, I said. Just look at what she is doing. And Lily spoke, her voice burning with the unleashed power of summer. We are working together. We are destroying the largest source of dark energy and corruption in this world. The source that you are so desperate to protect that you call outsiders to defend it. Oh, God. Lily didn't know what was in the well. She understood that it was a source of dark energy, but not why. I kept forgetting that she had had the job for only a comparatively tiny amount of time. Before I'd killed Aurora and left poor Lily holding the mantle of the Summer Lady, she'd been a young woman, no older than Molly, only without Molly's skills and training. She'd been putting her life back together while dealing with the massive power of her mantle, taking a crash course in fairy leadership, struggling to learn. And if someone had been there to feed her lies as part of her basic education in the supernatural, someone whose word she had trusted, God only knew how much of her knowledge had been twisted and colored. Who told you I called up outsiders? I asked. Maeve? So arrogant, Lily said. You reek of arrogance and deception, like all wizards. Even the famous Merlin who built this abomination. Her eyes narrowed. But as complex as it is still made of mortal magic. This circle that we used to stop your interference, it's part of the architecture here. All we had to do was feed power into it to close this place against your allies while we tore it down from the inside. If you keep going, I told her, you are going to destroy yourself, Lily, and everyone you brought with you, and a lot of innocent people are going to die. Finish it, Lily, Maeve called. I told you they would lie. Mortals always lie, and that is why we must stand together. We cannot allow ourselves to be divided. Put him down, and we will complete what we have begun. Lily, please, I said. Don't take my word for it. Don't believe me. But be certain. Find out for yourself. Then you'll know. You don't have to do this. The summer fire vanished abruptly. Lily stood over me, her hair mussed, her naked body so beautiful it hurt. She spoke in a quiet, dreadfully numb voice. You can't tell me that, she said. Not you. Do you think I wanted this? Do you think I wanted pain and death and fear and war? Do you think I wanted this mantle, this responsibility? Her eyes welled, though her expression didn't change. I didn't want the world. I didn't want vast riches or fame or power. I wanted a husband, children, love, a home that we made together, and that can never happen now. The tears fell, and as the heat, the fury, came back into her voice, the fire gathered around her again. Because of you. Because you killed Aurora. Because you made me into this. You raise your hand against my champion, my friend, and when you are defeated, you dare tell me what I must and must not do? Lily, please, I said. You have a choice. Maeve was laughing again in the background, an Arkham Asylum kind of laugh that echoed across the bare, burned ground. Now, Lily said, her burning voice bitter. Now you give me a choice. The mini-star flared to life in her palm again. Thus do I choose, you son of a bitch.
Night of Winter, burn and die.
I got it, I think. Or at least I got most of it. Lily had spent her life a victim because of her luminous beauty. Lloyd Slate had been the last man to abuse her, but I doubted he was the first. All her life, she had been shut away from making choices. But she clearly had not wanted to be part of the world of fairy. As a changeling, she could have chosen to become a full fairy being at any time, and she hadn't. Then, when I killed Aurora, I had even taken the choice to remain human away from her. I hadn't meant to do that when I killed Aurora, but that fact made no difference in the outcome. I hadn't just killed Aurora that night. In many ways, I'd effectively killed Lily, too. I'd thrown her into a world where she was lost and afraid. A grieving and furious Titania had doubtless not been the supportive mentor figure Lily had needed. And even if she'd been a newly minted immortal, she must have been horribly angry and sad and afraid and lonely. Easy prey for Maeve. Easy prey for Nemesis. I wasn't sure whether there was anything about that entire situation that I could have changed, even if I'd known that it needed changing, but I still felt like I was the one at fault. Maybe I was. It had been my choice that changed everything. Maybe it was fitting that Lily kill me, in turn. Her fiery eyes seared into mine as she launched the little star at my heart. Chapter 49. There was a flash of silver, and the little star bounced off of the mirror-bright flat of Fix's long sword. It soared into the earth a dozen yards away and hit the ground with a flash and a howl of heated air, creating a brief column of white flame that presumably had been intended to replace my head and neck. Fix was holding himself up on one elbow and held the sword in his left hand. He looked like hell, but he made a single deft rolling motion and came onto his feet as if he didn't weigh anything. And he came to his feet between Lily and me. "Lily," Fix said, "what is wrong with you?" Eyes of flame regarded him.
You're all right?"
"I said that," I said. My voice might have squeaked a little, my heart rate was up. "Harry, shut up," Fix said.
"Lily, look at him. He isn't a threat to anyone."
I guess I must have looked kind of bad, but still.
"Hey,"
I said. Fix twitched his hips and kicked me in the chest. It wasn't hard, but in my condition it didn't need to be. It knocked me over.
"Sir Knight," Lily said, "I..."
"Fix, it burns."
"Stop this," he urged quietly. "Let's get out of here. Find some place quiet for you to meditate until you've got it under control again."
"I need to..." "He tried to hurt you."
Fix's voice hardened.
"The ground is burned black, Lily," he said. "And there's frost all over my mail. There are burns all over his arms and shoulders, but I wake up fine, lying in the only grass left on the hilltop." He held up his sword. The last 6 inches or so of the blade were simply gone, ending in a melted mess. The point must have been lying outside the area my shield had covered.
"But it was hot enough to do this. Forget what anyone said. Who was protecting me, Lily?"
She stared at Fix, the furious fire still curling around her, lifting her hair, burning from her eyes. Then she closed them with a groan, and the fires went out. Lily turned her head sharply away from me.
"This is too much," I heard her whisper. "I'm going to fly apart."
"My lady?" Fix asked.
Lily made a snarling sound, turning eyes that still flickered with embers toward me.
"Stay where you are, Sir Knight," she said, spitting the last word. "If you move or lift weapon or power against our purpose, I will not show mercy a second time."
Then she turned and swept back toward the pyramid formation of she assaulting Demon Reach.
Her feet left clear imprints in the soot and ash on the ground, and little fires flickered up in the wake of her steps, dying away again when she had passed. She did not say a word, just lifted her hand again, and again something